Welcome everyone to our end-to-end conversation where we're going to catch up, do a little debrief on ATD in Atlanta, which was how long ago now? 3 weeks? I'm getting a bit lost actually with all the times and time zones, and I'm back off to Canada in about 2 weeks, and I know Mark Rebilliard's been back and forth to Australia since then, so it's busy for all of us. It'll be a pretty relaxed chat. You know, we've started out having a relaxed catch up there before we press record. I've personally got a few questions I want to ask. So selfishly, I kind of go there, but I'll also absolutely, it's open to everyone. You know, those who weren't there, others who were, like Doug, who was there, but we never actually got to see each other because we're so busy. So the floor is really open. But if it's okay, I'll start with the first question to get us rolling. And my first one's to you, Mr. Rebilliard. You're exhibiting this year, yes, with Color Accounting?
We did.
Okay, fabulous. And I thought it was your first, but it's not, is it? You exhibited...
It's actually our third, I think.
Third. Okay, when were the last ones?
Chicago in 2010, and we did one, I'm not exactly sure where it was, about 2 years later, and hadn't done one since, but I did go last year to Denver to stalk the whole thing and see what I, you know, sneak around and see what I thought, from only having the previous experience once and being involved in exhibiting, you don't really soak it all in. So it was a great chance to hang around on the Persona Global booth for a bit and also kick around and run into people like Doug, who we bumped into each other almost literally, had a brief chat because you were busy, and so that was it. And then we decided this year that we would get back into it. All our competitors are there, and whilst who knows whether it was hurting us or not, it just seemed like it's time to put on the big boy pants and go do our thing.
So I'm interested to know, I guess, what compelled you the first time in 2010 and what compelled you this time around, and were they any different?
Completely different. So 2010, we had no clue, and we just thought it was the right thing to do. We took a 20 feet by 10 feet spot, and that's a double spot. They're all in 10 by 10s, all the linear ones. And we got everything made. But we were kind of clueless in a sense, but we... lucked into a very nice design for the booth, and it was exceptionally good at pulling people in, and we got nearly 1,000 scans, and we thought we'd won the jackpot because that, we thought that was it. That was the name of the game. We soon found out that wasn't the name of the game, and this year our aim was to get as few as possible, but what we did want to get is high quality conversations. So that was a big difference. We went with a whole different intent. We had given away things. We were trying to get people to come to our booth for free candy and stuff like that. And in the end, that was great. A lot of noise, and it was hilariously funny, but it didn't do us a... And we got a couple of clients. I'm not saying we didn't, just through better luck than good management probably. But this time we were much more deliberate and targeted.
What are the deliberate things you did this time around? Like, can you give us an example?
Sure. So this time around, we made the booth set up a bit different. So last time we had a demonstration of how part of the workshop goes. We figured it would both be compelling because people would see this thing and wonder, curiosity, what's that? And that happened a lot. But then it was at a sit down table, and we had people sitting down, and we couldn't literally hit the eject button and get them out of there to let more people in. So we had a real choke point that had to go. So we had no seats. We had stand up cafe style tables, sort of, chest height, with the boards and everything on it, but we didn't use them really to demonstrate how individual parts of an activity worked. We used it to make a point about accounting literacy, and we had some other things to show them, but our real aim was to find out who they were, what was their challenges. It's no different to what everyone else was after really, but what we did was we physically wrote it down in front of them in a book. So we had a page, we wrote their name on it to show them we're serious. If they wanted us to get back to them, we wanted them to know we were going to get back to them and send them a copy of this page that we'd filled out, almost a bit like a little mini contract, a moral contract. Mm-hmm. And if we were brave enough, we took a selfie with them, with their name badge. Because I tell you what, that was hugely important later, because you think you're going to remember who they are. I wrote it down. We did 69 badge scans. And out of that, we had 38 of the sheets or the notes on the actual app, whether you do the badge scan, filled in for further contact. So sort of 38 higher value conversations. Neat. Still in all, a bunch of those did not give us their work email address, which is a defensive mechanism for sure. And I'd say, even though they seemed genuine, a bunch of those probably, odds are, won't be, I guess.
So can I carry on from that conversation, Pete?
Go, Eric. I mean, yes.
One of my companies, we operated for 12 years, and we did about 20 trade shows around Australia, and I did one in Germany as well. But Mark, in terms of qualifying your leads and follow-up, from your 2010, you went with high-volume scans. What was your conversion rate?
Less than 1%.
Okay. And did you, well, how did you filter them down? Did you email everyone and come around?
We tried to funnel it, tried to, what we hadn't caught was their level of interest or even anything memorable. What we did find out, I think Mark Schenk, who's just joined us, was party to this conversation. Might have been at the end-to-end dinner we had there, Pete, that someone was talking about an algorithm that some companies use post the event to filter out any email sent to the company that's got the words ATD in it.
Yeah, I remember.
Now, Doug, you might have to block your ears here, but and straight into the trash so they didn't get choked by thousands of people following up. We said to people when we scanned them that unless we took notes, we weren't going to follow them up. They would get our weekly newsletter, that's it. And we had to make sure we didn't do so inadvertently.
And did you not use ATD in your subject line?
Did not. Used Atlanta and other words, which may also have been filtered, who knows. But we didn't use the words ATD just in case, or the acronym ATD.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. A little quick time out again. Mark Schenk, can you hear us? Can we hear you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, fabulous. Good to have you on board. Okay. I'm going to jump to you if you're ready to go after all that little mini stress, because I just asked Mark Rebilliard sort of what compelled him to turn up the first time they exhibited and what compelled him to turn up this time around. And what about you guys? Because you exhibited too this year, I know. And what was behind your reasoning to do it this time, being your first time?
Well, that was our first time exhibiting properly at any conference. And the reason we did it is because North America is, well, as Sean's brother describes it, it's like the field of gold.
Is that right? Oh, cool.
And, yeah, so his brother, Sean's brother, is the head of sales for Trinchero Family Estates, one of the biggest wine companies in the US. And he's the head of sales. And he just goes, this is the, it's just like walking around picking up gold. So North America is a huge market, and they are totally accustomed to buying the sort of stuff that we sell. And we've got four or five partners in the US who are very poor salespeople. And so in effect, we're not even a scratch on the surface of this enormous thing. So part of our strategy is to expand our market in the US. And so exhibiting at ATD was, it's a key part of our strategy to do that. So that's why we were there. Build the awareness, find new partners, raise the brand profile of storytelling for leaders and storytelling for sales, make sales.
Yeah, okay. Well, we had a similar thing, Mark. We were also looking for sales partners as opposed to direct clients. And of course, we weren't turning anyone away. But do you have any sense of what the relationship was in the approaches you had between partner level inquiry and client level inquiry?
Oh, well, we've got 11 potential new partners and just under 160 leads.
Awesome. That's nice work.
I came in the end of what you were saying, Mark, about not putting ATD in the subject line? What's
There was someone was talking about it. I'm pretty sure it was at that end-to-end dinner we had, which was awesome. And everyone who missed out really missed out. That's all I'm saying. There was some good secret information shared. And there was one of the guys there, and I just can't think. Was he the guy with the books, the author?
Sam.
The young guy? Sam. Yeah, Sam.
Yep.
Sure, it was Sam. He was talking about post-ATD, some companies put an algorithm into their email system to filter out any incoming emails with the words acronym ATD in it on the basis that it's going to be spam-like marketing material. And so we deliberately did not put the ATD anywhere in the email. Not that it's mattered too much, because it's still in all, even with much better high value conversations, leads, the follow up is still very clunky at the moment. We'll get there, I'm sure, but they've probably been swamped is my guess, and we're just in the white noise. So we're just waiting a week or two to go back.
Yeah, so we've made initial contact to all of those leads, and the response, even for people that I had like personal one-on-one conversation, and they asked for stuff and I sent it within
a became the godparent of their child.
Yeah. We swore fealty and blood fealty for life. Or it's kind of love Game of Thrones anyway. And
still a bit tricky.
Look, it's like throwing pebbles into a dark hole.
I'm glad you said that. It's not just me feeling bad.
So thank you for, you know, touching on why you were there, Mr. Sheik. But did anyone tell you beforehand that it was and will be a good investment? Or do you just sort of take it on your own sort of regard and say, you know what, we need to do this. It's worth doing.
Certainly, the John Gornstein from Persona Global was, you know, he's a big advocate of ATD and the value.
Because John turns up every year and has been for a long time, right?
More than 20 years, yeah. 27?
On reflection, maybe I should have talked to more people. Because at the moment, I'm really worried that the return on investment is not there. I mean, I know it's early days, but that's my concern, because it is a huge investment.
And it is. And
some of the... What the dollars are, please? What are the dollars for exhibiting?
So I'll tell you from our perspective, it's the booth is about, the double size is about $8,000, just over, eight and change.
Then, the USD or Aussie?
No, this is real dollars there, Tony. None of that Aussie kangaroo stuff.
Pacific.
These are the ones that make the world go round. No banana dollars. Then the badge scanners, it came to just under $11,000, including shipping stuff there and back, and insurances. And we had a bit of an unusual approach because we're cheapskates. We would buy those cafe tables that stood up. They were brand new from Walmart or somewhere, delivered to a friend's place near the venue. We carried them in so we didn't have to pay the union. Sorry about that, union people. And set them up ourselves. And at the end, we donated them back through the venue to a local charity, so we didn't have to ship them home, because the shipping was more than they were worth. So we did that with all the above ground stuff. So three tables, the floor tiles, we donated those. That was about it. We actually scrapped all our backing because we decided it had run its course and needed to be new next time.
And once, I mean, you had how many people on your booth? You had five of you?
We had up to five, or six when you were there annoying us. But we had up to five, but mostly there wasn't five there because that would be too many. And if we had two of our sales partners turn up to provide help and try and steal leads off us, just joking.
Would it be reasonable to say that, you know, total investment is more like double that, like 20 plus thousand?
Oh, if you took in flights, and that doesn't include international flights. So we had everybody there. There's three of us, so that sounds a lot bigger than it is. But two of them had to fly, one from Geneva and one from London. So, and luckily I was only just around the corner in Wisconsin. But then you've got accommodation, which was significant. So if you added up all that, that would be more again. This is purely the costs inside the venue.
Yeah.
That 11 grand.
I heard from someone that's about 25 grand US sort of all up once you've sort of all
said. Yeah, that's certainly the figure that is 20. Well, I would say for us it'd be closer to 30 US.
Wow. Including alcohol for you guys.
Jeez, no, if you include alcohol, 42.
Yeah, I'm not game to add that part of it up because it's just...
And we won't know for probably 6 to 9 months whether that was, you know, even close to worth the investment, right?
Yeah.
In terms of follow-up.
And, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And some of it's bamboo. It won't shoot for 2 years and then all of a sudden, boom, a client will appear. That's what happened after Chicago. As badly as we did there, we still picked up a significant client 18 months later, and that was from there.
Okay, I'm going to ask one more question because I've been dominating here and, you know, you guys could jump in. But I'm kind of glad that Doug's on the call because I'm curious, and I'm sure you probably don't have this information, or even if you do, probably can't share it with me. But when I was walking through the halls one day and I saw all the faces, I mean, there's like 10,000 plus people there, you know, roughly. And I thought, wow, it's wonderful to see all these people. And I thought, well, I wonder how many of them are trainers or developers, you know, or IP owners here, or even company trainers. And how many are here are actually buyers, you know, people who are sniffing around and looking for something to use back in the house. And I just was my brain just jumped to, gee, I wonder whether that's changed over the last 5 years, you know, 5 years ago, were there more buyers here than there are now? And I don't know. I mean, I don't know why that popped into my head. And I figured, well, ATD will never share that information. But it was I was trying to get anecdotal evidence too, by walking around and asking people in booths what they thought. Do you have any instincts on that, Doug, without giving away the farm or anything like that, you know?
Well, there's obviously more trainers than buyers. There are lots of companies that send delegations there, big companies. And so they might send 20 people, of whom one or two may be buyers. So that's not an insignificant segment of the attendance. So I would have to guess, I would hazard a guess that the buyers are a disproportionately small percentage of the total 10,000 attendees.
Mm-hmm. That's for the end user, clients. But I guess in terms of buyers for some of us, like the two Marks who had booths there, some of the buyers are other training companies, right? Who want to carry your product. And there seem to be a bunch of them around.
There's definitely were people hunting for IP to put through their network, for sure.
Yeah, there was, wasn't there? Cool. And I ran into a woman who, she was in company, she was a learning and development director, and she'd brought with her developer. So they were just there poking around to see what they could, well, I'm not going to say copy, but they could, you know, get ideas from to inspire and build their own. She said, we only build our own material. I'm here to just, you know, sniff around.
Yeah, I'm sure there was more than one of those too.
All right. I mean, I got a bunch more questions, but I'll be quiet for now. Anyone else want to ask anything at the moment?
Diversity of inquiries. I mean, I can hear you're going for straight end user purchase, but you're also going for dealers. Were you able to pick up dealers outside the US, the Asian delegates or any of the other country reps that were there?
I'll jump in there first, Mark, if that's cool. Most of ours, strangely, were outside the US, I think. Most of our partner inquiry, a couple inside. I'm not sure how that far they'll go. But, certainly the classic China, Middle East, India, Fear Factor 1, popping up everywhere. But, that's the way of the world. They're huge countries. Massive populations, thirst for education, middle classes rising or risen. You know, it's classic, really. We had not necessarily big firms either. That I was going to remark on that earlier, Peter, was from what I remember about Chicago, there were some big firms with people looking for IP. These were more your standard two or three partner, not saying they were small, but certainly not a big Dale Carnegie style organization or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And the same for you, Mr. Schenk, were your sort of affiliate inquiries from most of the other companies in the US?
Yep. So I, Spain, France, India, Thailand.
Oh yeah, Thailand.
Hong Kong, Mexico.
There was a woman from Turkey when I was standing there with you.
Turkey, that's right. Yep, Turkey.
What about Brazil? Had three or four from Brazil, which we'd never had
one
before.
One from Brazil. Yeah. From Sao Paulo.
And that's interesting. I mean, I was sitting next to Angela Savelli, who she's got Personify Leadership, but I was sitting with her booth too, just having a chat, and someone walked up interested in being an affiliate, and it was from another country other than the US. So it's very interesting, but I think perhaps it's, I don't know, perhaps it's cultural in the sense that a lot of providers in the US and the US-based providers, they set up big head office operations. They don't often have local distribution networks. They have some are spotted around the world. So maybe there's a sense that, you know, the Americans that do turn up at ATD think, well, you know, I don't know, maybe there aren't those opportunities. I don't know. Maybe
maybe
situation that doesn't exist. But because a lot of the big US-based IP providers that I know there and chat with, they just have sort of one big head office, and they have associates, but not necessarily, if you like, affiliates or licensees in their own country. And then they'll sometimes go with a licensee in another country. I found myself talking again here. So who, anyone else? Steve or Terry or Eric?
No, I don't have anything at the moment.
I was really interested in your question, Peter, about the demographics of the audience. So on the one hand, because I know nothing about ATD, absolutely nothing. So on the one hand, it could be corporate in-house trainers. Yep. Yes, it's one possible demographic.
Yep.
Had another that. Is independent or small operation training companies or trainers.
Yep.
Is there anything else in the demographic mix apart from those two?
Head of department, like head of L&D, head of HR, like the actual buyer. We had some of those rather, you know, in-house trainers are nice and they get very excited, but they don't have buying power usually. So you can run into that brick wall, you know, 6 months later after 30 emails, suddenly it's like, oh no, that's never going to happen. Like, oh, okay. But so we're much more encouraging talking to someone who can actually make a decision, always, of course.
Sure.
So there was some of those as well. And I was going to add something in that, Peter Frampton, my business partner, spoke on the Sunday, which was the day before the exhibition opened. And we weren't sure how it was going to go. It was the very first presentation of the first day. We're worried it was a bit outside the mainstream of the event. And we were put as far away as possible because it is accounting after all. So if someone wants it, they'll run a long way to get there, no doubt. But it turned out pretty well. And we had from that, 50 or so folks that were there, we had a good percentage, healthy percentage turned up later to talk more, both after his speech, after his talk, and all back at the booth later on, which I was really encouraged by. And I'd certainly say if you can build in, and it's not easy because everyone wants to speak for this very reason, if you can build that into your overall package, it's definitely worth doing.
Yeah. So Steve, there's 10,000 plus odd people there, predominantly US, but there's a lot from international, as you've probably heard. And there are anyone and everyone in between from the sort of L&D spectrum. And there's a lot of IP owners, a lot of people selling stuff there, exhibiting. But there's also, whilst the exhibition's going on, there's these concurrent sessions going on that are somewhere around an hour to an hour and a half. And you can choose which one you go to. You might want to go and learn about coaching or about color accounting or storytelling or whatever it is.
Something and good those like that. Are,
yeah, that's where you get up and do your thing, do your shtick for an hour and a bit. And
Peter, look, I'm familiar with that because you might remember, I actually speak at a lot of conferences myself.
Yeah.
And I'm gobsmacked by the exhibitors at every conference I speak at. I'm amazed at industries that hang off one. And we've never exhibited. I only see the exhibitors when I speak at the conferences. Like I spoke at Namir a couple of weeks back for a pharmacy group, franchise pharmacy group, and the exhibitors there, I don't know, I must be a slow learner. I was amazed at all the exhibitors and the range of them. But I was interested in particular in that demographic. So we've got corporate in-house, independent small operators, heads of department. Are there any other categories that would fit into that demographic?
So people like yourself who have their own product, right? There's a lot of them there.
So there's IP owners.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if you could put a percentage breakdown, I know there's going to be a real guess. Well, what do you reckon the breakup would be? So corporate in-house?
I honestly have no idea.
Okay, no problem.
I don't think we know.
Because our sample size is way small. And there's a lot. There's a healthy percentage that are just there because their corporation has paid for them to go. It's like a thank you or a reward. Who have no intention of buying anything, but filling up their bag of pencils and pens from the various stalls, which is pretty good stuff. We actually had a little bait table away from the main area, so those folks could just be comfortable going and doing that without getting swept up with anything important.
So really what it tells me is you've got to be crystal clear about what your objective is here in terms of your target audience and what you want to really achieve. I mean, that's what I'm learning from you guys, that you've got to be crystal clear. Like, are we after partners? Are we after buyers? Yeah. And you might even need to make a distinction in your own mind about which is most important out of those two.
It's hard to filter them, but in terms of, I think it's always, if you have that intent in mind, it seems relatively inevitable that that's kind of the conversations you end up having. And one of the things I'd highly recommend...
Also reflects back on... Sorry, go ahead. Sorry, Mark.
No, you're right. There was just an audio lag there. I'd say is absolutely be crystal clear on your intent, but also on how you're going to follow up. Like, we learned so much from this one. We thought we had it down and we were just, again, it's like, oh my God, we could have been so much more effective. Just little things, no deal breakers, but little things that would have made life easier back in the office when you've got the spreadsheet of the scans dumped out. And all of a sudden you look at it going, now, was that the Chinese guy that we met on the, and you start doubting yourself and we could have been better with that. But yeah, definitely looking at the booth sizes and the messages that people send. And again, you get a spectrum from woeful to unbelievable Star Wars style booths, everything in between that would have cost $100,000, no doubt or more to set up for 3 or 4 days. And you got to make a decision where you live in that spectrum, because you can't be everything. And the one thing for me, being a highly visual person, when I walked around Denver, I was almost crushed by the visual noise. As I was walking along an aisle, I felt like I was in I was a bit of meat walking down a pit of crocodiles. It was all like coming at me. And we didn't want that. We wanted it to be really gentle, and we picked a corner so people could kind of sidle around, and we kept back from the front a bit so we weren't on people. Maybe that's just the Australian approach, but that's how I felt. And so we were really clear on the design of the booth and how much air there would be, whether there's a table across the front creates a natural barrier, a counter like a shop. That works for some, it wouldn't have worked for us.
I'd never thought of that before, but I do like the fact that you're on a corner. I preferred the corner booths to, because you do feel like you're kind of being assaulted as you're walking down through the middle.
Just the lasso.
I would agree. I would go for a corner, and I wanted a corner, but couldn't get one.
Sorry.
Yeah. It was you.
Yeah, it was us.
But I totally agree about the our booths were very similar. We didn't have the table at the front. It was like a place where people could come in. But I remember Denver as well, and the feeling that was like a river of humanity flowing down the aisles. And so we'd actually been planning, how do we go out there and spear them and get them? And we had these, we had prepared these cards like, hey, you know, you want to be a better networker? Storytelling can really help. We can tell you more. Yeah, that's, anyway, totally did not have to do that, like not once.
You had marvelous design and signage in your booth though, not blowing smoke. It was awesome. You did a great job on that.
Yeah, but and so we didn't do any spearing. People just flowed in, and I mean, there was a couple of times where it was quiet, but we were, oh man, I actually had a bit of a throat infection while I was there, and by about 5:30 in the evening, you know, I was well by 3 o'clock, I could barely talk.
Didn't matter how much rum you were gargling.
I'll tell you, that rum, that was good. It was great. I mean, people just come in and interested. But there was one more demographic that we haven't covered, but that I was very surprised at, and pleasantly, because one of our products is Storytelling for Sales, the amount of sales executives that were there.
Yeah, that's, I was just going to mention that too. Sales teams and yeah, just, that was amazing.
Yeah, and one of the best leads that we've got was the... a guy comes in and he's flicking through the Storytelling for Sales workbook and just sort of watching. I went out and said, oh, g'day. And I'm thinking, you know, this guy's just a tire kicker and having a bit of a chat. And he's going, oh, yeah, what's this rubbish, you know, blah, blah, blah. Sales, I know a bit about sales. I've got a sales team, blah, 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 yeah, yeah. Anyway, he asked me questions. I answered the questions. You know, 15 minutes later, he's going, oh, my God, I got to get this. This is great. This is perfect for him. Anyway, and he hands me his card. And he's the head of business development for a little thing called WM. And I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, WM is waste management. It's one of the, it's like, it's just enormous.
Yeah. In the US.
In your heart, miss a beat.
And he's just going, oh, yeah, we just do a little bit of waste stuff, you know.
Just a bit of rubbish.
Yeah. A couple of bit of rubbish here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Doug, you'd be.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I was just going to say there are also other, I suppose, strategies, if you like, because, you know, I caught up with Michael Bungay Stainer, who you might have seen in an email recently. I shared, you know, his little story about, you know, writing his book and what have you. But his strategy is, as far as I can tell, is he got himself in there in the first instance, I'm not sure how, doing a session, like a keynote, whatever you call those. And he smashes them out of the park in the session, and he gets invited back to do it again the next year. And that's where he generates his interest and his leads and what have you. He doesn't host a booth in the exhibition.
Well, he doesn't. He doesn't have a follow-up spot. Yeah.
So that's just his strategy. In fact, I think he left on the Monday. You know, his session was Sunday afternoon, I think. I see Terry over there looking very thoughtful. if you can still hear us, because you guys have been to, not ATD, but you've been to different exhibitions. I know that much. And,
yeah, much smaller ones, yeah.
Yeah, and has your strategy changed recently? Do you guys do the keynote rather than exhibit, or do you exhibit as well, or do you?
We have attempted to speak also, but we have generally exhibited in the past 2 years, or 2 or 3 years. Yeah. Okay. The ROI is it's marginal, but we do get a lot of our business is repeat. So if we do get two clients out of an exhibition, that's fine with us, or even one client. It'll pay for itself. So, so it's hard to say. The last one we participated in Singapore, out of 100 odd delegates, about 50 people gave us their cards, 50 plus, and they seemed quite interested after I'd spoken. But it's still early. It's less than 2 months, so it's hard to say what's going to come out of it.
And Mark, how did you get that hour and a half session? Do you have to pay for it? Do you nominate yourself? How does that work?
You nominate. You put your name in and your topic, and that's pretty much it. You're pitching and against others for a very few spots. And ATD are in the great position where they can really pick, you know, whatever flavor of the month, plus the, you know, spectacular speakers like Simon Sinek or anybody. You know, the two guys from the military this year. I would have loved to have seen that. that is just such a great part of it. But yeah, look, it's worth the effort to try and get one of those spots for sure.
Hey, Mark, I just want to pick up one. Like we were saying about the Kelly brothers, and you would have loved to have seen them. I made sure that one of our team went along to the keynotes each morning, and it was so valuable as a conversation starter.
Oh, in the as people came up?
In the booth.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. So what did you think of the Kelly brothers? Did you hear the stories they were telling? And like, we just got so much leverage.
Storytellers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So for us, I mean, I would have loved to have done it, but I was just too busy. Just making sure that somebody went along, because it sort of gives you something to link back to the participants, the people who are, the punters who are wandering around.
Yeah.
So anyways, as a strategy, I think that's something that's worth doing, is to get at least the keynotes covered so that somebody in your booth has got that.
Yeah. And the other thing I'd suggest that I think we did well this year was we had a flip book, with plastic pages that you insert. Low tech PowerPoint is what we call it. And we didn't want any electronics because it creates a whole raft of issues. And so we had one of these books, display folders. And if someone asked us a question like, well, how do you get accredited? We just had a graphic page that we'd already prepared. And we just flip over that. And you could just point and talk. It wasn't totally accurate. It was more informational and all that. But if they were keen, then we could send them to the actual web page where all that information is later. So we had a book of graphical stuff, lots of images, because that's part of our thing. And that was quite good, because we could flip around and point to different images, people in a workshop, people doing this, people doing that. Because often they're trying to get in their head, well, what the hell is this? What would it look like in our business? Can I buy this and not be embarrassed or made, would be a bad decision for us? Those sort of things. So we found that really helpful. And I know others have used iPads for that. We've tried that before, and I just think it's more hassle than it's worth. Hey, no one stole our display folder, that's for sure.
Doug, as an ATD board member, how do you feel like it went this time around? Do you have any?
Yeah, well, one of the tasks that we have as board members is we have to go talk to every single vendor in a particular section of the floor. So the section from 800 to 1100, and talk to every single displayer. And the feedback I got was extremely positive. People felt good about the traffic. Guess they ran out of lunch the first day or something. So,
oh, those major complaints, yeah.
By 11:30, that was, yeah.
A couple issues like that, but other than that, extremely positive. I had one individual who was unhappy that'll never come back again, but that's one out of...
gee, if you don't get one.
Yeah, yeah. If I don't
not get trying one, hard enough.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'd say two thumbs up from the people who were there. Very good feedback. And I did like the idea of offering yourself as a speaker. I mean, there is an application process and a vetting process. But the major keynotes, I mean, you have to be a world-famous speaker to be one of those. But they have dozens, if not hundreds, of individual sessions that you can apply to speak at. And the audiences for those are, I mean, they're self-selecting in terms of interest. So you're going to get a room of people that are already interested in your topic. And I think that's a great way to either augment a booth display or instead of a booth display. Absolutely brilliant. The other thing I wanted to add, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, what tips and tricks, what ideas, how do we maximize the possibility of being one of the speakers? And I'm not talking keynote, one of those hundreds of speakers. Yeah.
I just say do a really thorough, really good job on the application. Every year I hear from people that were turned down And so sometimes they complain, you know, that it's not a fair process. But I can tell you that the people that are vetting these applications are absolute professionals, and they are doing their sincerest best to get the best speakers possible. And I know many of the speakers, and I know how hard they work to get good people on the platform. So I just say, do a really thorough job, you know, have really good references and make a powerful case. And Mark Shank is a storyteller. I know you know how to do that. So just make a good case and don't give up. If you don't get in the first time, go for it again and find out, you know, what you can do to make it better.
Do they prefer a more detailed application or one that is a higher level sort of zoom of what they offer?
Yeah, I wish I had a quick answer for that, Peter. I don't exactly know, but I know that they're very interested in the, I call it the topic du jour. So I have a friend that did one on micro learning this year, and obviously that's a huge topic right
good
now.
Good timing.
Yeah, perfect timing. And she had a
pack. Was that Shannon Tipton?
Yep, Shannon. Yeah. Shannon.
Yeah.
So,
you know.
Okay.
Can I just say I know three Australians who I've been to about seven or eight of the ASTD, now ATD, conferences, but I know three Australians that have gone in and put in for speaker applications, and two out of three of them said they had to put it in a couple of times before they got a run, but once they got a run and they got good feedback, then they were hotspots for the next ones. They want success. And people like David Rock with his neuroscience, he's now well entrenched in there. And now he associates with speaking there. The guy in Melbourne, Ratcliffe, he wins his business direct. So he doesn't have any stands. He basically just gets in there and talks. And in fact, I have to be honest, I came on with the Think on Your Feet as a result of Ken speaking at one of the sessions, and 250 people. I was stunned that it was an Australian speaking, and he was the third one that I'd come across, and I'd just picked them off the chart. I didn't even check what their background was. There were a lot of Australians speaking at ATD, and I became a distributor for Think on Your Feet because of it. You know,
and just a quick thought, actually, because I went and checked out Michael Bungay Stainer's session after we'd had coffee that morning in my hotel. I thought, oh, I better go and see what he's got in a way. And he was fabulous. He's funny and he smashed it. He did a fabulous job. But one of the first things he did was actually write to me only 3 days later and said, hey, can you just give me genuine feedback? How did I go? and he's done it 3 or 4 or 5 times before. He just wants to get better and better at it each time. And he said, don't hold back, you know, just give me anything. and actually on that day, I sat next to a Chinese woman whose English is a second language, and it was a big room and the audio wasn't fabulous. You know, when you've got the mics on you and you know, it's a big, big room, and he talks fast and he's got an Australian accent. He lives in Toronto though. And all that stuff. I actually walked up to him only 10 minutes in with a little, and I said, hey, just slow down a touch, because you know there's a few here that aren't going to quite get it as quick. And he really appreciated that in the moment too, that sort of feedback. But I think they're valuable too if we can help each other share that kind of stuff. What did you see? What did you feel? How did you, what do you think others felt while they were in the room? You know?
Definitely.
Because I thought Pete Frampton did a great job too. You know,
he did. He did. I've seen him a few times and I was impressed.
Yeah, that's sure. Because you're trying to do a lot in an hour and a quarter, hour and a half, or whatever.
Yeah. It's a tricky slot, but you got to. He's exactly that. He didn't get picked the first couple of times, and we've done numerous now, and that was another reason why we decided to exhibit was. well, he's up there as a speaker. We might as well try and maximize our thrust here and do the booth. And we were delighted. And whether we get ROI or not, I'm not sure yet. But in the greater determination of ROI, not just my accounting one, I'm sure there's been a lot of positives generated. Even some clients that came up and saw us there came over to say hello. You know, there's a New Zealand girl who came up, and she looked familiar. And I've only done a couple of things in New Zealand, and she came up and she was all bursting and excited, and I'm sort of looking at her like a deer in the headlights. And then she tells me, "Oh, New Zealand." I thought, "Oh, now I remember where you're from." And if I'd remembered her name, that would have been awesome. But of course, that would have been. But that sort of thing was happening, and people popping up and talking about it, and that just leads to excited conversations that inevitably draws other people in, because they know something's going on there and they want to know what it is.
Hey, look, I'm wary of the time. We've got through about 5 or 7 minutes left.
Sure.
A couple of quick things from me, because what I learned, and I've shared with a couple of you already, but there was one group that was exhibiting down there on the floor that was actually making money.
Yeah, I was going to mention those bastards.
During the few days. And that's kind of unheard of, to actually physically make money whilst you're on the exhibition floor. And they were the e-learning brothers. Doug might know more about them, I'm not sure. But they certainly were hooting and hollering, and they were signing people up with credit cards literally there on the spot. And they are helping providers, whether they do external IP like some of us, or internal, if they're building their own materials internally at big companies too, they're kind of like a content library for building e-learning.
Yep.
That's probably the simplest way to put it. And, you know, the word on the street is they signed up over $1 million worth of business.
Get out.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
So they were having a good time. And on that note, though, what I noticed between, I was in Orlando a couple of years ago, and you guys have been, you know, Eric, you've been to a lot in the past too, but certainly this year compared to previous years, there's even more digital providers, more digital focused.
Everything.
E this, e that. And so that's part of the change, demographical change of those on the floor. And also, I guess, where people's interests and focus lie, whether they be the buyers or the seller.
Micro learning was another one that was everywhere.
Yep. Micro learning's big. So it's just interesting. I just thought I'd share that feedback with you. The other thing I wanted to share, before we finish off, look, this is a very personal one. There was 15 plus Intermed members there in Atlanta, and it was just bloody fabulous, you know, walking around, talking to each of those individually. But then we also had a nice big dinner, from which I already know that a couple of people are talking to each other about possibly working together. So, you know, the bonus, I suppose, of being there, a bonus of being part of this little community, is that, you know, there are also the opportunities to get what you want out of being there. You know, I only went on the premise that I'd run into end-to-end members. Really, I loved it, and I think that's going to help forward this community and getting better at it. But whilst I was there too, I threw out the idea of running an end-to-end meeting just before ATD next, because we see a critical mass of 15 plus people there already. You know, they're turning up in San Diego next year, probably. You know, perhaps it's time we ran our first North American end-to-end meeting, and why not piggyback, you know, ATD, where everyone's already going to be. So just want to throw that out to you, that we are genuinely considering doing that, maybe the Thursday, Friday, or the Friday, Saturday, depending on what. I'll talk to you guys individually about that.
If you were talking Friday, Saturday, I think that's a terrific idea.
Mm. Wouldn't add much incrementally to the investment, really.
No, not at all.
Okay, and that wouldn't cut into your booth setup time if we did the Saturday.
No, we booth set up on Sunday. We had heaps of time. There was no trouble.
Okay, that's good to know straight away. Thank you.
So, where's the next one? in Orlando?
San Diego. Which is a nice area to hang out for an extra few days. As well. Yeah. That's another reason we thought, well, why not? You know, let's perhaps give that a try.
Good surf there too.
The Canadians popped their hand up in Amsterdam and said, we'd like to do it. And when we got to talk about the time of year, we said May. And then we went, oh, May, crikey, because ATD will be on. Oh, well, hang on a second. You know, so one thing led to another. And when I asked everyone who's there at ATD, everyone said, yes, definitely, let's do it. So I
totally agree.
I think it's worth a try next year.
Yeah, I do too. Yep.
And you'll hear from us.
I support it.
And that's
maybe we could get ATD to sponsor it, given that you'll be drawing people to ATD. What do you reckon, Doug?
A pre-ATD.
There you go, Doug. Come on, Doug.
I'm actually off the board in December. So.
So close.
Losing my clout. I'm gone.
You'll be able to come to end to end then.
Hey, look, I really enjoyed the chat today, and thank you all for turning up. I think there's a few little gems in there, and I think those who listen to the recording are going to enjoy those, not only the rest of us who are here today. So thanks again to all of you.
Yeah, and I'll just put out there, if anyone wants any further information, I'm sure Mark Schenk, I can speak for you. Just ask us. We're more than happy to share anything. No, we don't know everything by any means, but we do know what we experienced ourselves. So.
Fabulous. All right. Those of you in North America, enjoy your evenings. And
go and have some dinner.
We'll get on with our day.